I'm Alan Helliwell, and this is Season 4, Episode 10 of Indotechno. The IFC, or International Finance Corporation, estimates that as of 2022, about 43% of formal SMEs in developing countries still have an unmet financing need, which totals roughly $4.1 trillion. In developing countries like Indonesia, lenders are frequently unable to assess an SME's creditworthiness and determine their own risk in lending to these SMEs. This is due to the problem of data poverty. Lenders simply don't have enough information to assess SMEs' credit profile and their own SME lending risks as a result. Indonesian SMEs still struggle to secure the funding they need to grow and thrive. That's where online credit scoring steps in, seeking to revolutionize the lending landscape by providing a more accurate, transparent, and efficient means of evaluating credit worthiness. Christian Limawan, founder of I4C, joins us to discuss progress in quantifying risk of Indonesian SMEs and where the path to progress lies. Thanks so much for joining us today, Christian.
It's an honor, Alan, to have the opportunity to share our stories to your podcast. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, Christian, we describe I4C as a quote-unquote innovative credit scoring company that focuses on supporting lending institutions that target MSMEs, or micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises. I want to ask you a question on behalf of any listener who may know little or nothing about credit scoring. What exactly is it?
So, credit score is essentially an instrument to measure the risk profile of a prospective or even existing borrower about their worthiness to get a credit line. To give a quick analogy, it could be similar to a GPA when students are applying for university or schools. So this score is used for assessing that borrower applying for a loan. That could also be used for assessing their customer lifecycle value or performance as an existing customer.
Thanks for that, Christian. Now, let's actually talk about I4C. How exactly did the company come into being?
It was around 2019 when we brainstormed the idea. Just a bit of a disclosure. So we are actually affiliated to a group which might be more known as the lending site Investree Group. 2019, we learned that there's many other conventional lending institutions facing similar issues for assessing micro, small, medium enterprises as their portfolio. Whereas at the same time, we've accumulated a lot of data, experience in experimenting with alternative data and machine learning algorithms. So we thought, why don't we share this knowledge to other institutions? And around 2020 was when we essentially established the entity, prepared the required licensing. And 2021 was basically when we obtained the license. Just to give actual terminology, I'm in compliance with the regulator. It's status in IKD, Inovasi Keuangan Digital, from the OJK, Financial Service Authority in Indonesia. And from that point onwards, 2022 until today, we are basically trying to expand the use cases, the traction with other clients outside of the group.
Very helpful. Thanks. But I have to say, online credit scoring for SMEs has seen many waves of innovation, and many of them seem to have failed. In Asia alone, we saw a major focus on it emerge in China roughly a decade ago with the innovations of Ant Financial and others. Many players failed to find useful data to do really robust credit scoring. What are the biggest learnings from these various waves in your mind?
Indeed, Ant Financial, I think, was a kind of big breakthrough in the innovation space for credit score a while back. Looking at the traction, I would say, generally, all across the world, with a particular reference in China, some of the most important learnings, I would say, is first, access to data. So quality data is essential for us to be able to profile any incoming population or incoming borrower, be it those that are already in the coverage of traditional credit history, or even those that are still new, the unbanked or underserved population, so that we have a better understanding of this borrower's profile. That's the first point. The second learning is basically the identifier. It might be simple, but this has a big role in collating or aggregating different data sources that might store a little bit of information of the same individual or borrower, be it in the form of a business entity or sole proprietorship. To give you a concrete example, let's say in our space, a user might be stored as user 001 in POS point of sales brand A, but they might be stored as the name of their business entity in human resources information system platform B. And they might have a different identifier for a certain e-commerce platform. So how can we combine these different identifiers if there's not a single standardized identifier from the private segment as well as from the government database? The third learning I would say is the idea of data sharing. It might be counterintuitive at first, right? As those that have the data of their users to share their data to other platforms or to us, third-party credit scoring providers. But when different organizations are willing to share their data and have that principles to combine, collate, and process further, it will actually create more value, especially for credit scoring services. Lastly, the fourth learning that I would highlight is the development of technology and policy. It's an interesting phenomenon. In the beginning, I think in China, a lot of the players were quite rapid in their growth through either like crawling the web-based, or maybe recently, many people tried to develop the open banking, open API platform. But if you notice the trends, it shifted rather quickly, the technology itself, and then at the same time, the development of the regulatory landscape, the EU with the GDPR. Now, I think if we bring back to Indonesia, there's also the PDP, Personal Data Protection Act, that is already established. And a lot of the organizations are learning to adopt to these guidelines so that it will, to a certain degree, influence how the algorithm of the credit score has been set up and then the future of how we're going to operate. So probably those are the four learnings that I would observe, Alan.
You mentioned a number of other topics, being finding reliable data, how fractured it is, and the challenges of data sharing. So I want to put a pin in those topics and get back to them shortly. But first, credit scoring seems to be a very crowded space in Indonesia already, with players ranging from CreditLab to BPS to DigiScore to Trusting Social. How exactly do we differ from these many other players?
The names that you mentioned actually belong to the same category as I4C, which is under the innovative credit score cluster, right? In credit score business, the business model relies on per hit basis. And if we look at the economic side or the business side of this industry, people would tend to target those that have high traction. These players that you mentioned, together with, I believe right now there's around 20 registered or listed players under this cluster, all of them are still focusing on the consumptive segment, consumer, the loans like payday loan, buy now pay later, that will generate a lot of traction, a lot of loan applications with small ticket size. It makes sense for the business to operate on a per hit basis, meaning they will generate a lot of hit or inquiry from the clients. From our side at I4C, we try to hopefully solve the pain points for the productive segment. There is actually pretty promising data from the Ministry of Cooperative, for instance, 63, 64 million, or some other institutions probably claim up to 69 million micro, small, medium enterprises. And the majority of them are still lacking credit history, but have the potential of repaying the loans if they were assessed correctly. So that is basically how we try to differentiate ourselves. Obviously, bringing in the experience from the group and then the network from within our affiliates as well as partnerships with third parties. So that is basically one of the differentiator. Second differentiator, I would say many of the other, I would say friends in this cluster, to my knowledge, they are used internally within their platform, which probably makes sense for some use cases if they have a good amount of user base. For I4C, our goal is to actually serve externally more other lending institutions so that hopefully we can make a dent in this space for the productive segment.
Very clear, the differentiation there. So Christian, what is the single most surprisingly effective form of alternative data that you guys have discovered at i4C?
So since our angle is for productive segment, from the beginning, our perspective was already trying to get a full picture of the data landscape, alternative data landscape for any micro or small or medium enterprise borrower applying for a loan. So we map out where are these data points coming from, right? The single strategy or the easier strategy is basically to map out the money in and money out. So on money in, when we analyze, there's many platforms that could give us good insights of that merchant's behavior, such as point of sales data, invoicing system data, e-procurement platform data, e-commerce data, and so on. Within each of the verticals, there's so many players. And the same goes with money out, the likes of utility bills payment, invoicing from the payable side, or even human resources information system. A lot of the bigger MSMEs start to use this kind of platform so that we could actually get clear visibility into their growth, especially when we observe it on a month-to-month basis. A particular example, just to share a bit, within the POS, point of sales, we had exercise one time whereby we discovered that a single data point of payment acceptance at the merchant level, whether it's cash only, debit card, credit card, or crisp payment, it actually correlates to the likelihood of default of that merchant if they were given a loan. So these are the kind of data points that would normally not be used at all in assessing a borrower from the conventional approach. You would probably look at the loan exposure, where have they applied for a loan, how is their performance, which from that sphere obviously brings value. But from our product or services as the Innovative Credit Score company, we will be able to complement existing information that they already got from the borrowers or from credit bureaus and that might not be visible at the beginning.
Understood. Now, we talk about using quote-unquote cutting-edge machine learning. I don't want to be too cynical here, but so many tech companies now claim to be using machine learning and AI, artificial intelligence. Can you give us one or two credible examples of how we are truly harnessing machine learning?
Totally agree with you. I think this has become a buzzword that everyone tries to use for their many purposes. Right? For our specific use case, going with my previous explanation of our approach in combining different data points from different players, one of the most challenging approach was to understand and make sense of the data. There is different data structures coming from each data partner that we engage with, even though they might be coming from the same vertical. Probably just elaborating more on the POS example that I mentioned earlier, right? There is so many players in the market that offer point of sale services to the merchants. Each platform has different features. Some of them cover all the way to inventory management. Some of them are just for capturing the sales documentation. And if you look at the user's point of view, some of them might subscribe to the freemium products. Some of them might subscribe to the more advanced products, which means at the data level, the data structure from these different platforms and these different users would vary. So that was basically our first advantage in employing machine learning algorithms to be able to find the correlation of different data partners coming from different data structures and correlating this into the likelihood of making repayment for our incoming borrowers. I think another one that I could share is currently we are exploring the use case to combine the negative information of micro, small, medium enterprises. There is in general two different sources. The first one is the official one, which is from the judicial system, but this part will take time. The procedural component will usually take some time, but if you look into the second category, the news outlet, it is usually faster for us to get the sentiments. We are now trying to make a correlation checking against these different sources to map out and understand, again, the identifier, who is that, either business entity or shareholder or management of a certain company that might be applying for a loan that we are trying to check, and the actual, let's say, sentiments, whether they are still in the process of legal review, already accused, or they're already convicted. That might be easier to find in the news. So those are some of the, let's say, advantages or benefits that we got from machine learning to be able to process that amount of data and then make or distill a certain insight that we package this as a credit score as the end result.
Got you. Sounds like there could be some very promising inputs for your machine learning capabilities. Okay, finally, chipping away at this backlog of questions I've started writing down, I4C is indeed part of an ecosystem of different independent companies, as you mentioned earlier, that include what seems to be at its center, Investree, which is a leading P2P or peer-to-peer lending marketplace. It also involves e-procurement platform MBiz and e-invoicing, accounting, and inventory management platform Sahabat Business. How is this ecosystem glued together? Is it by cross holdings?
You're right. It all also grew from the group, right? Investree's experience in serving the SME segment. Ultimately, you cannot serve the segment alone. You would need some sort of collaboration with different partners, parties, platforms that share the same interests. So that was basically the journey from the group started to make an investment in e-procurement platform. So there's a stake there at the holding level. And then as we expanded the use cases, access to data was also the challenge. And we observed that there is already platforms that offer accounting systems, environment management, and so on. So that's basically where Sahabat Business came into the picture. And all of these are basically affiliated through the holding of the group as ownership.
Understood. Are we considered captive to this ecosystem? Or if not, how do we encourage other business groups to work with us?
Okay, again, the key here is basically collaboration. Even for I4C, it was initially like an internal unit that we ended up spinning off as an independent credit scoring company. But for growing the industry at scale, it is not possible to work alone. So within, let's say, my case, I engage not only with the internal affiliates of the group, but also with external partners from the data side, such as telco data, social media, or other platforms that already have their users that I had mentioned before, as well as other strategic partners to be able to amplify the impact of our products and services. Started as, if we look back into the investor case, the playbook was always ecosystem play. It's not just exclusive with a selected partner, but we actually do encourage and are open for any collaboration with third parties.
Understood. Are there any groups that have a similar structure that our audience might understand?
Yes. In fact, if we bring back the previous case in China, Alipay, Alibaba Group, even in Indonesia, if you look into the e-commerce players, GoTo Group, Shopee, they also have similar structures in a sense or principles. From the arm of e-commerce, they would then have the lending arm. They would then have different arms for different purposes serving the e-commerce ecosystem, including scoring too. So this was what I alluded to earlier. There are other players within this sphere, GoTo Group, Shopee, that grew their ecosystem and so that there is an opportunity for extending scoring services, which to my knowledge is mainly still used internally within the group.
Yeah, I completely overlooked the GoTos, Shopees, Tokopedias, and others. It's more what angle they approach this from, like you say, e-commerce or shared economy, et cetera. But going back to China, in 2014, the government announced a 6-year plan to build a quote-unquote social credit system to reward actions that build trust in society and penalize the opposite. So the idea is that, for instance, if a traffic camera saw you speeding through an intersection with a red light, it would negatively impact your social credit, which maybe with other negative pieces of evidence could result in you not getting a job offer or your kid not getting accepted to a selective high school. What are your thoughts on the concept of social credit scoring?
I love this question. In fact, 2 weeks ago, my friend was in Shanghai and he sent a photo. He was in a shopping mall, sent a photo of two individuals on a big screen with certain Chinese words in it, which is basically showing their names, address, loans that they didn't pay, and then the amount of loans. So initially, I had heard about social score a while back, but I never actually saw how it looks. I only heard in the news, right? It was controversial. It was already live. Not really sure how it actually looks. But 2 weeks ago when I saw that photo, I guess two words. It's progressive and innovative, but I might be in trouble saying this. There are some other ramifications that obviously along, let's say, Western culture might not be appropriate. You're exposing someone else's privacy. You're exposing a lot of the probably ethical implications that we might not have seen now. Could be their families, future, probably, I don't know, standings in the society and so on. But I believe that was basically the intention of that social score, to get the public attention as the external force to, in a sense, teach and then increase the discipline and awareness of how important it is to have first credit and how important it is to repay your loan. I think there could be many misconceptions within the rural areas that if you got a loan, you could just flee and then not get traced. But in this day and age, I think it is quite hard to do that. And if we are able to educate, teach the population about the principles of credit itself, let alone the credit score, then the concept of social score would actually bring many benefits. I believe there are also some advantages for those that have high score, just to balance the perspective, right? You would not need to make a deposit if you check in an hotel because you're trusted. Again, these are just based on what I heard in the news. If you were to rent a bike, which is a common thing in China, you need to make a deposit. So those are the kinds of rewards and in a sense, probably like punishments to help teach the population the importance of credit and credit score.
Wow. That Shanghai example of your buddies is basically naming and shaming of the highest order. I agree with you. There's probably a very delicate balance of driving things like transparency, efficiency, and encouraging ideal behaviors. But on the other side, possibly not getting too close to what we, at least we Westerners, refer to as a police state. But onto another topic, we mentioned that 63 million SMEs in Indonesia are considered high risk and quote unquote unbankable with no collateral and no credit history. Can you give us one or two examples of companies whom you have made successfully bankable and what you did at iPerce to do that?
How can I respond to this question? So probably I will respond it this way. Our business model is basically a B2B with the lending institutions. We engage directly with banks, multi-finance companies, rural banks, peer-to-peer lending companies as our clients. Currently, we do not interface directly with the borrowers. We do get the data of those borrowers from our clients. Our approach of a success story with our clients is usually measured from the statistics point of view. As in, let's say from the model itself, whether it's the Gini coefficient, the AUC, area under curve, population stability index, and some other terminologies and that are usually used to measure whether a score is still predictive or not, is basically what we use to assess the efficacy, the predictive power of our score to our clients. The other side that we use is basically to measure the portfolio, whether those that we predicted to be good are actually remaining good borrowers or vice versa, bad remaining bad, or they become intertwined, which is visible from the loan outstanding as well as the portfolio from our client side. On that point, I think it will make sense for us in the future. So Thanks a lot for this question. I will take it as feedback for our future product or marketing purposes collateral to be documented, because I will need to get that data and permission from the lender side to be able to get that access to the borrowers.
You're very welcome. I will not assess any kind of advisory or consulting fee for that. Now, you just referred to the basics of your business model, but how do we actually make money at i4C?
Essentially, it's a business to lending institutions. On this part, our revenues come from two main parts, product and project. Product is basically the per hit basis. So whenever there's an incoming borrower that our clients want to check, they will call our API and then we will return the score and we'll charge them. That's on the product component. Second component is project. Project is a unique scope, I would say, because ultimately all of our clients, to my surprise, have the preference to either ask us to create a custom score, tailor-made scoring model based on their data that is used only for internal purposes, or they ask us to create a hybrid approach, combining the set of alternative data that we integrated and then combine it with the internal data that they already accumulated. So there is always that project component that we engage with our clients. So those are the two main revenue parts. Additionally, we do have some strategic partners. In fact, one of the credit bureaus in Indonesia is also our strategic partner, in which we develop a joint product together, and they're the ones marketing that product. So on this kind of scheme, what we get is basically sharing fee from the strategic partners that we engage with.
A more basic question I commonly ask our guests, particularly our foreign listeners who want to get a better picture of what i4C does: whom do we most resemble in the West? And maybe what about in a market like China? Who do we resemble?
Before answering that, please allow me to paint the landscape of the credit scoring industry in Indonesia. Similar to some countries and might be different to some other countries, we basically have two different licenses or permits to offer credit scores. So both are still called credit score, but it is a bit different. The first one is basically what we call a credit bureau license, which essentially is given to private companies that fulfill a certain set of requirements from the OJK, and they have their own regulatory framework that governs this segment. Initially, it was in Bank Indonesia, PBI 15, 2013, which then got rectified after OJK took over. And I think the latest reference is POJK 5-2022. Within the credit bureau space, there are currently three players. So they basically get the, I would say, privilege or permit to access credit registry data. Credit registry is essentially an aggregated overview of all the financial services institutions in Indonesia, including the banks, multi-finance companies, rural banks. I believe insurance and pawn shops are already required to submit to the FSA. So OJK, as the FSA, they would then aggregate these different loan profiles from all of the institutions. And then this is what is usually called credit registry. Credit bureaus have the access to this credit registry so that they can add additional value, doing the matching logic, generating the score, and eventually offering the credit report or credit score back to the lending institutions. There's also an option for them to offer this to the end customers like us to check for our credit report. So that's the first category. Second category is basically what we call innovative credit score company. So what differentiates the ICS is, from the regulatory framework point of view, we are still under the IKADIC, Inovasi Keuangan Digital, under POJK 13-2018, which essentially allows us to experiment with alternative data or non-credit data to then try to complement the traditional credit report or score from the credit bureau so that lending institutions could make more informed decisions of their incoming borrower. As an ICS, the players are not allowed to access credit registry data. So that is basically one of the main differences between these two industries. Now, going back to your question, the reference. For sure, for credit bureau industry, I think the big players' names would ring a bell in our audiences. The likes of Experian, TransUnion, Equifax are those that are more common for our North American friends. Or probably in Europe, I think Schufa is big in Germany. There's also another player, Criff. It's pretty big. I think they're headquartered in Italy, also grew across nations. For the alternative score in the West, you might have heard Credit Karma. They are a pretty good success story in the US, in Canada, and I believe they ended up getting acquired by Intuit Group. There's also some players experimenting with psychometric, Lendo EFL. So those are probably some of the references from the West. In the East, to my knowledge, each country has their own credit bureau that is governed by the government directly. So I believe like in Japan, there's only a single credit bureau provider managed by the government. I believe in China, there are a few on the credit bureau segments. For the innovative credit score or alternative data, probably the names that would ring a bell are Zima Score or Credit Sesame, which is owned by Alipay. So Alibaba Group had already accumulated millions and millions of data, and then they ended up offering this score into their platform to the existing users, which was quite an interesting case study in the past, probably leading towards 2020.
Wow, quite an encyclopedic knowledge you're sharing with us in terms of how things play out in Indonesia and our comps globally. What new services can we offer in the future at I4C?
I do see big opportunities to engage with the non-lending industry too. We, in fact, are in discussion with the insurance industry, still trying to align on the use case and then the value added for this, let's say, not common industry that use credit score in Indonesia. Additionally, there are some other government institutions that we are in discussions with as they start to realize the possibility of API monetary businesses. So hopefully this will be a new stream of services that we either act behind the scene, trying to co-develop a certain product together with them, or if we can treat them as our data partners and guide them to bring that insights to the public, I think that will be excellent. My biggest vision though is to eventually, it's going to take some time, once we have stronger aggregated data ecosystem within our network, this will only make sense with the pre-requirements, is to extend the score directly to the business owners, which would probably help me to answer your previous questions on the impact of the business owners. Meaning, it's some sort of like a business health check that the business owners could check their score before applying for a loan so that they could either pinpoint which institutions will give them the better rates or will help them to get higher approval rate for a certain loan product that might be different. This will hopefully be my future product or services to be launched directly to the business owners, which probably will extend our revenue scheme to be more of like a B2C. And C here is basically the business owners, those MSMEs.
Understood. Now, MSMEs are highly dispersed throughout Indonesia, not easy to find in numbers. How can we effectively bring on new customers in such an environment?
I would probably answer this from two different angles, for scoring purposes and from the MSME's point of view. For scoring purposes, my view is, again, we will need to implement a single identity for MSMEs, either that is based on the business ID or tax ID. For now, those are the two unique IDs that we often see already captured from the different platforms. Then the second one for scoring purposes is consolidation across companies and probably, if possible, to different government bodies. With this current landscape, each entity has their own way of storing and claiming how many are affiliated within their institutions, but we don't know how many of them are actually intersecting to one another. This will help if we can clean up the data pipeline starting from the registration of the business, reporting of their performance, taxation purposes, monitoring if there's some legal implications or other diversification of the business to be able to link together those MSMEs. Those are some of the views from the scoring perspective. From the MSMEs point of view, what I notice is the stickiness for the MSME owner to use a particular platform is not really high. If there is another, let's say, platform that offers better rates, they would be inclined to move to that other platform. That's probably the indicator of why there's so many POS players, SRS, invoicing system, and so on. If each of the player offers a clear segmentation and values features for a certain stage of the MSMEs, then collaborate through the verticals so that, in a sense, we are helping the MSMEs to groom them so that they can grow. I think that will help onboard more MSMEs to this, either like digital platforms or even using the digital services like our service.
Understood. So what exactly comprises CAC or customer acquisition cost in this business?
Okay. Again, since our business model is B2B to the lending institutions, we basically target the risk team within the lending institutions. They are our clients. It still relies on the sales cycle and relying on the business development BD manager. So one-on-one engagement with them. If we take into account the other components for a customer acquisition cost, then I would probably factor in the infrastructure cost that we use to run our servers, access to data, because whenever there's an inquiry from our clients to us, then we actually need to, in a sense, pay our data partners. So that's also that component. Additionally, basically the headcount for our data team, tech team, product team to be able to sustain the operations and grow, I foresee.
Basically, we don't have a lot of the traditional elements of customer acquisition costs, which might include heavy marketing and advertising expense, promotions, and some form of discounts or anything like that. That doesn't seem to be very common in the business.
Correct. For me, right now, we run with very minimal marketing budget. We rely a lot on our network getting introduced, getting to know the risk team, or even the management of our prospective clients. For marketing purposes, I think the closest that we could pinpoint is sponsoring an event, being a specific topic for these clients, or participating in other networking events, featured as a speaker or have our logo up there. That will be the proceeds for marketing purposes. Even though, to be honest, the efficacy of such sponsorships is something that I still, in a sense, assess. So far, a lot of the referrals are more effective. The clients would usually ask, who has used your service? So that is basically the turning point.
Understood. Christian, what are our business goals by, for instance, the end of 2024, whether stated in revenues, customer served, other metrics?
Okay. I'll be transparent in this case. In our business revenues, right? There's the project and product component. Currently, the majority of our revenues still come from project. The loan application for micro, small, medium enterprises portfolio is usually very little. The loan size is very big. So an institution that processes, let's say, 1,000, 5,000 loan application per month could be considered big for this portfolio. But if you look into the ticket size, then it's very huge in comparison to the consumptive segment. So my goal is to shift the contribution of revenue from project basis into product basis, which we do see a trend when we onboard a new client. Obviously, it spikes in terms of the traction, and there is little to no customization when the clients use product, when they use our generic score. So it's a smaller effort from our team. Additionally, in addition to shifting the revenue into product basis, they're launching what we call data aggregation features. So what we observe is many of our clients start building their data or big data team. They want to build their internal model, but they lack access to alternative data. So with data aggregation features, they will be able to consume alternative data from our platform in the sense that we act as the data hub for them. So they integrate one by one to the data partners. They could integrate with us, and then we get the access to the data partners that are already affiliated within our network. Obviously, these are all based on consent that the clients need to obtain from their end customers or the borrowers. The other goal that I could share is probably the rural bank segment is what we are very curious about. There is 1,600 rural banks in Indonesia. Many of them are starting to transform digitally, but the majority of them are still serving the captive market based on their geographical location. We do hope to engage from a one-to-many approach with either the association or with certain groups that have bigger or many branches, so that that will amplify the traction of the product side of our services.
Some pretty exciting opportunities going forward, clearly. Christian, what is the toughest thing that you and leadership face currently at I4C?
Obviously, access to data. It's very fragmented. It has been the biggest challenge, and we knew that was basically what we need to solve. So it's more of infrastructure play, connecting with them one by one and giving easier access to our clients to access these different data sources. Second, I would say literacy, and break it down into two parts. Obviously, for the end customers like us, not a lot of people are aware of credit score. It's not a new thing globally, but in Indonesia, I think it's somewhat growing in terms of the awareness and literacy. Literacy number two, I would say within, even from the financial institution side, meaning they are aware of the definition of credit score. They might have some form of their internal credit score, but in terms of really using it effectively, what I see is not optimal, meaning the credit score itself is not yet used as the automated tool to make a decision. It's more of a reference, and many of the institutions still have manual intervention.
Yes, financial literacy, that ever-present challenge, and definitely an opportunity if you have the right solution. Christian, you've definitely raised my literacy. This is one of those few episodes in which I feel I've learned a full semester's worth of insights into an industry. Thanks so much for joining us to discuss the state of credit scoring for small enterprise in Indonesia. Such a critical part of the country's growth formula going forward. Thanks again for joining.
Thank you, Alan, for having me and all the audience for listening.
You're very welcome. We hope our listeners have enjoyed today's episode. As always, please consider sharing any feedback that you have about the End of Techno podcast with us. Terima kasih. Sampai jumpa lagi. Thank you.